Hello everybody, welcome to Goldbridge Saves Football. It is the final Premier League weekend that we're previewing. It's the final of the Europa League that we'll be previewing. I'm nervous about that. And sadly, it's the final Goldbridge Saves Football podcast as well. This will be our last show. It's been a challenging last few months. We've been on and off. You know, we put a lot of work into it in the first 18 months and we're all very, very grateful for everybody involved. And we're going to go out with a bang talking about the top five, the Europa League final, some interesting comments to get into. We're not going to talk about Gary Lineker, though, Will. We've decided that we'll leave that out of our final show.
Yeah, I am going to talk about you, actually. I've got a few home truths that I've been meaning to say for the last 2 years, and I've actually prepared a statement.
Good.
I haven't. We've had a great time. We had a lovely time at Moors. They put the prices up out of the blue, and since then, it's just not been the same. We're sort of in love, but we're not making love. I'll play to finish the podcast. I've got a bugle, I'll play the last post, and that'll be the end of it.
Yeah, big shout out to Niall, our producer, who's listening as well. But yeah, look, I think honestly, people will be like, why are you stopping? It's been really challenging since Christmas. We had a lovely set. Basically 100% increase in rent for no reason, and it wasn't the best place to be anyway. I mean, we were constantly in battles with the lawnmower. And then I think it's damaged the whole ability to do it in the way that we wanted it to do, and then we've like missed a few weeks, and I just think we got to a point where we were like, let's get through to the end of the season and then park it as something that we've all enjoyed. And I think that we should hopefully get a very interesting end to the season. Will, and as you can see, since I'm not that excited, because there's something that's on Wednesday that's just sort of taking my mind on at the moment. I mean, I was hoping the tests are going to come back negative.
I was just going to add as well, yeah, good luck with those tests and hope the treatment goes well for... Actually, it's getting worse. Digger are deep. I was going to say, if you are in the Midlands area and you are looking for a bespoke pub/podcast set, I'm willing to put a reasonable offer in. Please get in touch.
About that, yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, you could just sell it a sheet of time.
You'll have to give me the number of the person who built that, because at some point I'm going to have to, just have a big bonfire in November.
Yeah.
I'd like to rebuild it at some point. You know, if I ever get to that point where I've got a room in a house where I can just build it and walk in every now and again and go, aha!
Well, that set behind you, I mean, that's tried to kill you. At least the one at Solihull didn't do that.
Yeah, I did look at that. It just wouldn't fit in here, which is a shame. But yeah, look, these things happen. We'll blame
Solihull. Anyway,
football. Move on.
Bastard. Should we start with Man United Tottenham? Because by the time this goes out, yeah, I feel that'll be on the tip of everyone's tongue.
Yeah.
And we'll come to Premier League stuff. I want to know who would be worse off winning it. Because in my head, and I'll let you go first, but in my head, if Man United win on Wednesday, that'll actually be worse for them.
Yeah, I understand why people, and some United fans have said this as well, but obviously I'm in possession of all the facts. And actually, this was asked to Amorim in the press conference, and it was a good question, because they said to him last week, you clearly need time on the training ground. Surely if you're not in Europe next year, you've got the whole week on the training ground. Could it be a better situation for United? And he said, yeah, I do need time on the training ground. You're right, good question. But what you don't realise is just the massive issue of not being in the Champions League financially for the club. If you think I need patience now, I would need huge patience from you, the fans, the media. So I thought that was an interesting insight from Amorim, because there is that logic that only training, you know, having a week in between games and not playing in Europe might benefit United. But I agree with Amorim. I think the problem is you can't polish a turd, so you're still training these players. And I think he knows he needs new players. And to get new players in, even if it's three or four, you need money. And I genuinely think if we don't win on Wednesday, we really don't have any money, and he's probably got to sell to buy. So I think that's the problem. Whereas I look at Spurs... Go on.
I was going to say, but on the player situation, do you not think it actually aids the recruitment? Because if you're in Champions League, you end up maybe sort of overspending, over-recruiting for a Champions League campaign and sort of doing what you've done before. Whereas if you don't, you can sort of maybe build a bit more sensibly.
No, I think that's why it's a good question, because I think there are football clubs where you'd look at it and go, they'd be better off not being in the Champions League. Like, I look at Spurs with a new manager and I go, actually, there are a bunch of players that have just massively underperformed. Like, if they didn't have the Champions League and they just focused on the Premier League, because they're not going to win the Champions League, if they just focused on the Premier League next year with a new manager, they probably might get top five. Whereas I think with United, we won't get top five, whether we're in Europe or not, without bringing in players. And to bring players in, you've got to have the money. And if we don't win, we haven't got any money. So it's a bigger game.
Yeah. I feel Spurs would definitely be in a better position for the reasons you outlined as well. And then Manchester United, I just think there's this, you know, we spoke about it when Ineos were coming in with, like, Sir Jim Radcliffe setting his stall out and giving almost a 3-4 year plan of, like, it is going to be shit for the next couple of years. Maybe not this year, but even just for so much talk of academies at the moment and that sort of pathway through, and even just bringing sort of players that have been on the verge and giving them more of a chance next season, and just sort of changing that philosophy of having to buy from, you know, mid-table times, overpay for players and stuff like that. I just feel there could be a real line in the sand and say, right, that was the lowest it's ever going to get. 16th, 17th in the Premier League. We're not in Europe. And this is the real start of this is the darkest hour before the dawn.
It might come true. I mean, how do you feel the game will go? I've sort of got a big preview coming up on the United stand in the next couple of days, but I have said this: when you look at Spurs, they've drawn the least amount of games in the Premier League this season. They've scored loads of goals. They've conceded loads of goals. They play a high line. I don't buy into this. This will be a tight, cagey affair. I think if you look at Spurs, that's literally not what they do. They won't have many 0-0 1-1s. So it could be 4-4, but I think it will be a good game. I don't think it'll be boring.
Yeah, look, the thing with those English finals that we've had before, they have been boring, but just because of the way they play or how badly they both play, I don't think it will result in that. I'm sort of more sat on the fence of who I would want to win. I live in North London, more by the Arsenal ground. Do I want Tottenham to win? 2 years, ironically, this podcast probably been... Number one was Gareth Southgate. And then number two, I'd say, was Big Ange. So would I want to see Big Ange win and see the philosophy come true? I think so. And just for what we've just been speaking about then, I just think it'd be a false dawn for Man United to get back in the Champions League. I'm not saying Spurs will get in the Champions League crack on and finish in the top four next season. I just... Yeah, I probably want Spurs to win. Big Ange do it, see him smoking a cigar, 4x at the end,
and they're going to sack, and then they'll sack him, which I just don't get that.
But do you think it could be a sort of situation to... I feel like Levy almost is the opposite of what fans want. So even if they win and there's still that talk of him, of getting rid of him,
I think they have to sack him, mate. I do. At the end of the day,
why? Because of the league.
They've got to sack me, mate. At the end of the day, they've got to do it. No, they have to, because you just hit the Ten Hag thing there. I think when you lose the fans, when the club make a decision against what the fans want, then it will bite them on the arse next season as soon as the results go wrong, and then everyone will say, "Well, he should have done it." But it's incredible to me that you would sack a manager that has just won a trophy that... you know, the best trophy that Spurs have won in my lifetime.
And just, you know, I saw Arteta speaking yesterday, and, you know, everyone speaking about how well they're doing, and we've spoken about it, of, you know, being in that Champions League positions and, you know, really being a solid team and looking to build, but they have not won anything yet. And the fact that Spurs could do it in the Europa League, or, you know, Arsenal are aiming higher with Champions League and Premier League, but again, if this is the last podcast, the big message for me is win trophies. Get that on a t-shirt, print it. We can't. We're leaving. But I just think, though, for the fans, for just everything that football's about, like, I think that then, and this season's been great for that, hasn't it? I was obviously going through the cups yesterday. We'll come on to Palace winning that, Newcastle winning the Carabao. I just think it's been a real reminder of what football is for that reason.
Yeah, I do wonder just what the split is in Spurs fans with Ange as well, if he was to win it. Look, we sacked Van Gaal after winning the FA Cup, so it can happen, but I just think that's Man United. You know, we were still thinking we could win titles, so Spurs sacking a guy who's won the best trophy in their recent history, it doesn't add up to me. He said, I'll win two titles in 2 years, you know. And he did, and he would. Well, he hasn't done it yet, and I don't think he will. I think United will win it, but...
Do you think, yeah, well, haven't Spurs have got a very good record against you, though, haven't they?
Yeah, but they haven't got a great record in winning cups, and United do. This would be three in 3 years, incredibly. I've got a horrible feeling. The game is just so... I'd rather it was over two legs so that nothing can jeopardise it red card-wise or VAR-wise. Yeah. But that's the thing that worries me. People walk into these games and go, yeah, the experience is going to count. It counts for nothing if Casemiro gets sent off in the first 5 minutes, does it? So it's a high-stakes game. It's a flip of the coin game. But
What is your actual prediction?
United win.
I'm going to go... I want Spurs to win. I think United will win. I'm going to go United to win 3-1. And Harry Maguire to score.
Love that. I would love that. We'll have to see. Hope so. Let's go top five next, because I tell you what, I was really, really pleased to see Forest hold on against West Ham yesterday, just to set up the end to the Premier League that I think it justifies, with the relegation not existing and Liverpool basically won this title at Christmas. It feels weird to have what I think has been one of the best Premier League seasons in a long time, but then have nothing really going on. So this extra fifth spot has really opened up perfectly. And you couldn't have planned a better last game. I bet when that came out last June, Chelsea at Forest, last game of the season, Chelsea fans were probably thinking, might miss that one, go on holiday early. Suddenly, it's amazing scheduling at the City Ground. Chelsea have to win, really, to guarantee Champions League football. If they lose it, they could finish as low as seventh. Obviously, if they win the Conference League, they won't be in the Conference League. They'll be in the Europa League. But all options are on the table for Chelsea. They could be in the Conference League, the Europa League, or the Champions League.
Yeah, and I hope they don't get into the Champions League personally. Also, I hope Villa don't get in there. But also, I think the one that's going to sneak up on us because of the weekend and just because they are tough to play is Man City's game midweek. Mm. Obviously, because they're sitting in sixth, aren't they? Obviously, people are just giving them 6 points to the end of the season. But they have been shit this year for their high standards. And I think that's going to... It's Bournemouth, isn't it, on Wednesday, Tuesday, Wednesday?
Bournemouth home and then Fulham away.
Yeah, like, you know, what's another podcast staple over the last two years? Tough place to go, Craven Cottage.
Yeah.
It's very exciting. I didn't think we'd get this. And... I don't know who... I definitely don't want Chelsea. Definitely don't want Villa. Newcastle in there.
Newcastle have done it now. You know, Everton at home.
David Moyes is tricky toffees.
I mean, look, you know, never say never. I was keeping an eye on the Italian title last night, and Napoli drawing away to Parma was not expected. But then Inter drew at home to Lazio and sort of threw it back to... All Napoli have got to do is win at home now on the final day. So strange things do happen, but I would expect Newcastle to get over the line. I think Man City will be there, and I think it will be one of Chelsea, Villa or Forest. I think if Chelsea draw and Villa win, Villa would get it. If Chelsea win, they get it. And if Forest win and Villa don't win at Old Trafford, they get it. But it's crazy. I was looking at the Forest game yesterday. They've only won one of their last six before beating West Ham. You think about the volume of points they've dropped there, and there's still a point that they really probably should have had this wrapped up. So they set up a big game at the City Ground, and I think Chelsea will just get it done, actually.
Well, I was actually going to say the opposite, because I feel like I went to that Forest Spurs game, and just because of the way Forest play, that sort of counter-attacking style, which, you know, does get adjusted. But in the main, that's what you'd say is the overall sort of tactic. And I feel Chelsea will be a bit more dominant on the ball, come at them. And, you know, that three that goes forward, I feel it really could do a bit of damage on the break. So what I was going to say is, as well, because people will be saying about the Premier League season, how bad it is, but I think if we do a whole football season, I actually think it's been one of the best.
Relegation was never going to be a thing, so you can't moan about that. And the title...
No, but I mean, like, including the cups in as well.
Yeah. And the title, I think Liverpool's point tally isn't incredible. It's good. It's just Arsenal, for whatever reason, didn't push the title race. So we didn't get a title race, but I think the top five race has been really good. But look, I've got to say, there are Chelsea fans out there that aren't happy with Maresca and they're not happy with Chelsea. And I sort of do get it. Watching them recently, they are a tough watch. Like, United are terrible and we should have got a draw on Friday. We were never going to score a goal, but the goal we conceded was a bit crap defensively. And Chelsea did not, you know, for a game they needed to win,
yeah,
they were very lethargic. And I just think they will get the job done. Obviously, they caught Chelsea, they caught Liverpool just after they won the league, which gave them 3 points as well. So I think they'll just get over the line, Chelsea. But then again, at Christmas, I thought they were in a title race and they just went on a bad run. So weird season for Chelsea. They could get Champions League football and win a cup, which would be a good season, but not yet convinced about their future, really.
Don't you just find it remarkable that, like, it's so obvious to us and so obvious to the fans of, like, the recruitment element to it? Like, Chelsea have needed a goalkeeper and a striker for God knows how long. And I don't know if they're just refusing to do it or there's not been the right people out there, but those two positions just feel, I feel they'd have been comfortably in the top four the way it's played out this season. Yeah. And similar for Arsenal, wasn't it? I know we've moved on from them, but that sort of midfielder that they're looking to get in Zubimendi, and obviously the striker issue we've talked to death about, but I just find it remarkable. Like,
well, even Liam Delap is not I don't think Liam Delap's the answer for Chelsea. I think he's a good player. I understand why Man United are going for him, because money's too tight to mention and we might not be in Europe. So Liam Delap's a punt, isn't he, at 22? But Chelsea going for another, you know, 20, it's a bit like Nicholas Jackson. I can see the potential, but why are you not just going for the Osimhens of this world and the Gyökereses of this world? And, you know, established striker is absolutely what Chelsea need. And when you've spent nearly 2 billion, I don't understand it.
No, it's just, yeah, it is just remarkable. But then on a Chelsea perspective, I think at the start of the season, I definitely didn't have them in my top four because of the manager. Mm-hmm. I think they're about average. Villa, you know, as much as it pains to hurt me to navigate the tricky waters of that Champions League campaign and play some top tier games, come off the quarterfinal of playing the finalist PSG, I think they have done very well to recover and sort of, you know, cast your minds back to the start of the season with West Ham winning the transfer window. They definitely won the January transfer window, didn't they? And
yeah,
I think they really need that Champions League football to sort of dig on and crack on with Emery's plans. And Newcastle getting the trophy and Champions League football. I think because of how bad Man United and Tottenham have been, sort of gets a bit forgotten about that these teams have really cracked on and maybe played a bit above their station. So,
well, I felt that the build-up to the FA Cup was abysmal. I was at Seb's football tournament on Saturday talking to some of the dads, and they were like, well, what's everyone doing later? I think some people were angling for an afternoon down the pub, and I was like, FA Cup final. And they were like, what is it today? I was like, yeah. I think it was just a lack of, and they cleared the Saturday for it as well. All the Premier League games have been on Sunday and Friday. I don't know what it was or why it was. And then it ended up being like, I think a lot of people would have watched that and enjoyed it. So it was a little bit of a damp squib build up. And then it was Crystal Palace. I mean, I remember Crystal Palace playing United in 90 and 2016. So third time lucky. Massive result for Crystal Palace. Huge controversies in it as well. But again, another, like you said, with Newcastle, it's another domestic trophy in the UK, England actually, taken by an underdog in a sense, which is great. It's not Man City winning it. Three FA Cup finals in a row for Man City and they've only won one. Not won a trophy for the first time since 2016. But it was just a really enjoyable day for Crystal Palace. And I think everybody got what they wanted, which is not Man City winning.
Yeah, I thought it was brilliant. Especially that first half was brilliant because there was just so much sort of back and forth in the play. A couple of the incidents, obviously that with Henderson being the main one, the penalty save. I just can't believe that you let Marmoush take your first ever penalty in an FA Cup final when you've got Erling Haaland.
Yeah, a lot of people saying that.
It's not like you got Nikola Zigic like stepping. It's like Erling Haaland will probably be the greatest scorer in Premier League history.
Was there any explanation on that?
I don't know. City had missed 4 in 6, I think.
Right.
Not all Haaland, but various different penalty takers. But I just found it absolutely astounding. And even the way they sort of played into their hands, like with the goal as well, like playing, I know Nico O'Reilly has been doing really well, especially in those FA Cup games, but his marking for the, for Munoz coming down that right-hand side, it just felt like, I know that their City, they're going to implant their style, but it didn't feel like they'd make any sort of adjustments for exactly how Crystal Palace would want to play.
Yeah, I think, what did you think about the Henderson red card that didn't happen?
Look, I think, you know, I wanted Palace to win, so I was delighted that he didn't get sent off. I think they were saying he was sort of going away from goal, but I think that's very much because Henderson absolutely whacks the ball away from goal.
I couldn't believe it.
And if Henderson doesn't touch it with his hand, Haaland scores.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, we've spoken about it a lot over the podcast, and I'm not about to be a hypocrite now. Like, just because I wanted Palace to win and I don't like Man City, it was shocking. I couldn't understand it at all. Haaland's going to knock it past him and have a shot on an empty goal. Oh, right, there's a defender there, but it's still a goal-scoring opportunity. He's handled it outside the box deliberately. I mean, it's got every ingredient for a red card and nothing happened. But also, I felt then they gave the penalty because they knew they'd messed up, because on first viewing, yeah, I thought it was a penalty. But then when you see it, he doesn't get the player until he's got a little bit of the ball. So I actually think was a good tackle. And De Bruyne should have been booked about 10 times. But in fairness, if Dean Henderson gets sent off, that's probably going to be a Man City win. And I think if it had been against Arsenal or United or Liverpool, there'd have been a massive outcry. But I think it's because it's Man City, everyone's sort of like, oh, whatever.
I was watching Stick to Football the other week, because they got Sean Dyche on, and they were asking him about VAR, and I think they were sort of teeing him up for a sort of Goldbridge-esque rant about it. But he was saying how much he likes it, because further down he was saying at his level in the Premier League and around that, he said that he feels like it's really levelled out the decisions against the top teams.
Yeah.
Which I thought was quite a refreshing sort of outlook on it, for all it, you know, all its faults and where it needs to improve. But you know, obviously the Fergie stuff and everything like that.
We've moaned about it along the podcast, and it was called Goldbridge Saves Football. And I think that was one of the things that we said at the start, get rid of VAR. I actually think that's never going to happen. And sadly, I think football's in a worse state 2 years later than where we started. I mean, look, we've just seen an FA Cup final with two horrific decisions. It's not got better. It's actually become more almost acceptable that it's so bad. But I think VAR isn't the problem. It's the people running it. Like, we see the camera of what Dean Henderson went, and it should be, mate, understand why you missed it. It's a red card. It's the constant, we see that what the decision should be, and they go, no, we'll make the bad one. And that's not really the technology. It's the people in charge of it. And as we've always said, Will, I think one change they could make is just to separate the two. On-field referees do not be VAR operators. VAR operators do not be referees. They're two separate organizations. They don't call each other Ollie or Tails, and they just do their job separately and don't have relationships. And I think it would change instantly, almost make them competitors in the sense that, you know, we don't get on. It's like Rangers and Celtic, Liverpool and Man United, Arsenal and Spurs. You're two separate organizations. You're not mates. And I think it would change massively then.
Yeah, 100%. From the start of the podcast to where we are now, about 2 years on, do you think football's in a better position as a whole, you know, officiating aside?
Well, I was thinking about this week, like, and maybe you have as well. I was thinking about some of the things that we've moaned about. I mean, we're going to talk about the Club World Cup at the end because that's the next big football thing. But we have also spoken about things like, there's not as many goals outside the box. There's not as many worldies now. Everyone plays out from the back. I know that's a problem of yours. Football's become quite like chess-like. And I think on that sense, I don't want to be negative. I mean, I think the officiating's terrible and it's getting worse, as we've just said. But I think football, there are some sprouts of positivity. We've mentioned Morgan Rogers this season, who's sort of like a player that runs at people. But more than that, look at PSG, look at Barcelona. They're sort of really high profile teams that do not play pet ball. They play on the front foot. They get their wing backs forward. They've got wingers who take people on. They create lots of chances. They do, you know, look at some of the goals that Yamal's scoring and Rafinha's scoring from distance. It's almost like there are signs of football being back. And you see that, like, you know, obviously my lad plays football, and you know, you go and watch them train and they're all wearing Yamal tops and this, that, and the other. And it's like, you know, Pep's, and you were going to talk about Pep anyway. What a disappointing performance again. What an awful season. They are in crisis and they are inadvertently to blame for a lot of the issues of the Premier League. This reliance on playing out from the back, passing lanes, refusing to shoot, refusing to take people on. But there are clubs out there now who are looking to do that. And we know how football can change. You know, Lineker and co, you know, have been knocking one out to Pep for 10 years about how great they are. And it feels like we might be moving, and it was always going to happen, into a new era of football, which hopefully will transmit to the Premier League soon.
Yeah, I think, you know, and you say how it's translated down, you know, League One this year, I think they put a stat up for Blues the other day. We had average of 66% I can't say it.
Possession.
Let's just end it. Let's just end it now. We've all had enough.
This is the reason.
Possession this season. But he was very much saying, and I think it's very true to him, for having possession, for not having possession for possession's sake.
Yeah.
So having it and actually doing something with it. And for us, I think that's been very prevalent, where some of the times I watch Manchester City, especially in that first half, it just feels like a training exercise of attack versus defence. And I don't think you can blame a team like Crystal Palace for sort of doing that, and they played on the counter well. So yeah, I think that the big one for me is that point that we were speaking about, that Gary Neville raised the other week, about, you know, there's no way in the modern game with all the talent in the world that the players with the most amount of touches and the most amount of possession should be centre backs. Like that would be, if we were going into a third season, that would be my biggest one, because, you know, centre backs are centre backs for a reason. They're either failed strikers or failed midfielders. So I think that's obviously hopefully be a big change. And if it's changing on a European front as well, that's normally a sign in England. It normally changes because we have to be 2 years behind the eight ball, don't we? In terms of, like, if Inter and PSG are in the final this year, I think that'll be the sign of change going forward.
Yeah, I hope so. What else was there to talk about?
What about the race for eighth?
Yeah, which I didn't even know what was back on now. I mean, fair play if anyone in the chat wants to explain this. I was sort of talking about it. When Crystal Palace won the FA Cup, I thought that meant that eighth place can't be in Europe, because obviously Palace aren't going to be in the top 10, so they'll take up a Europa League spot, which meant I thought the Fulham, Bournemouth, Brighton, Brentford race for eighth didn't mean anything. But then if Chelsea win the Conference League and they finish in the top, wherever, six, then that will create a place for eighth, I think.
Mark, if it's all right for you, I'd like to hear from our halftime sponsors. Yeah, yeah. I just watched Match of the Day too, so yeah, it's basically what you just said. So I was just about to repeat it, but it's interesting. I think people are moaning, but I think that Conference League is set up for someone like a Brighton, Fulham or Brentford to be a part of, isn't it? It's not a Champions League light. It's for teams that, you know, like, I literally think it's perfect for those teams, because they are probably never going to get Champions League football. If they did, it would swamp them. And it's a good way to sort of build yourself up, play on a European level, play teams. If you're a fan, you get to go to all corners of Europe and everywhere like that. So I'm excited for Palace to play on a Thursday night in the Europa League as well. I actually think it's very exciting.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, we might have the flip side next year of it's you get the fifth place spot based on how your teams do in Europe. And if you've got like Fulham in there, Palace in there, Forest in there, they might lower the tide. Hopefully not. But
yeah, true. Yeah.
But that's how it can work. It's not always a positive. I mean, I was looking at it. We could easily have half the Premier League in the Europa League when you think about it. 10 places.
Yeah, no, I think it's you know, we've earned our way in there. I really don't like this people moaning about Manchester United and Tottenham like not getting a Champions League place. I think it's absolutely ridiculous and poppycock at its best, because that's been the rule. I think it's a really exciting rule. I actually like that teams don't drop down from the Champions League to the Europa League as well, because it just keeps the competition separate, and I don't think you should be rewarded for being knocked out of a competition by going into another one. And I think that is slightly better for the health of those competitions. It just doesn't help that if you look at the Premier League table, they're 16th and 17th, but I don't think that's the end of the world.
As somebody yesterday said to me, do you think we should take one of the top five spots away and give it to the FA Cup winners for the Champions League? And I was like, absolutely not. You know, it's 38 game season, isn't it?
Like, yeah, yeah.
UEFA want the best teams in the Champions League. So they say, we'll take the five best teams in your league, which is fine.
Yeah.
What Man United and Spurs are doing is winning a Europa League, which has always had the promotion system, basically. Chelsea could be in the Conference League, but go into the Europa League. So, yes, just people get locked in on how can Man United and Spurs be the Champions League where they finished 16th and 17th? Because they qualified for the Europa League and then they won it. End of days. Come on. Move on.
Going into the summer, who do you think needs the biggest summer, and who do you think will have the biggest summer?
I think Arsenal have got to get that striker in, and therefore I think in a year's time Arteta needs to be winning either the Champions League or the Premier League. I don't necessarily think if he doesn't he'll get sacked, but we know what Arsenal fans are like, some of them, and I think he's got to deliver it next year. I actually think they probably will. Liverpool already making a good signing with Frimpong. Apparently they're going to get Kirkes from Bournemouth, who's been fantastic. I'm sure they'll replace Nunez as well. Man City, Will, I mean, you tell me. I mean, who knows what happens with Man City?
That feels like if you ask me now, I feel like, oh yeah, City are going into 2 years of sort of abjectivity. But I think I've mentioned before, like, this is where Pep can really do his work. Rodri, who we've learnt over the podcast, you're not allowed to say is the reason they've had a bad season.
But he is.
But obviously he's back for next year. And just having a two-year sort of, it's almost like a two-year last dance, isn't it, for Pep? And he's already said he's going to have a break at the end of it. It's like, I did this, that Football Manager World Cup, when was that, last September? And the managers for those teams were just managing for 3 years.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So like a lot of the managers were like buying players for £250 million and putting instalments on for the things that didn't matter for them in the future. And it's all, I know Pep won't do that, but he's sort of been building for 10 years, hasn't he? Where now it's 2 years, he hasn't won anything this season, and I feel like that's a bit scary. It could go completely the other way, but he is still the best manager and coach in the Premier League, and I think there's just, with that extra incentive and that extra wake-up call, I do worry for next season.
Also, what about, surely at some point this court case has to be resolved this summer.
Fucking hell, yeah.
That's what I'm sort of thinking about.
We've been doing this podcast for 2 years and nothing's been resolved.
I know. It is weird. It's hard to say next season. We have got the Club World Cup coming up, and I did want to just touch on this because whilst I've resisted it, I pretty much guarantee I'm going to certainly watch some of it. I'm not watching two games at 2 o'clock in the morning, but I think once it hits the knockout stage and it's like Man City, Real Madrid, it'll be early July and it'll be like, I'll tell you what, I'll have a bit of this. It's almost like a glorified pre-season. So, but what caught my eye about it is Sporting have just won the Portuguese league. They're not in it. Barcelona are going to have won the Liga. They're not in it. Liverpool and Arsenal are top two in the Premier League. They're not in it. And Napoli are going to win the Italian league and they're not in it. So it's just like, and I know people up in the comments, yes, because that, but you can't wait till the end of the season to put the best teams in it. And like, this is why the Club World Cup won't work. Whoever holds that tournament up are going to be, FIFA are going to be, they're the best team in the world. They're the best team in the world. And everyone's going to go, they're not. They're definitely not. This is a tournament that's made up by a weird invite system that you have to do months before the end of domestic seasons. And the pitfall of it is they're not the best team in the world, unfortunately.
Yeah. I completely agree. But I think it'll be that double-edged sword, won't it? Because, you know, I'm sure you've had the same where you've been on holiday and then there's a bar showing a pre-season friendly on in July and you're like,
I'll have a bit
actually,
of that.
It's been 3 weeks since I've seen a game of football. I'll just have a little look. And then all of a sudden you're sucked in.
AC Milan against Chelsea in America. And it's Chelsea's kids with one or two reserve players against AC Milan's reserves.
It's like I've just been watching the fourth season of the Wrexham documentary.
Oh, yeah.
Mainly because episode two was about that game that we went to.
Oh, yeah.
But they beat, they draw with Chelsea in there. Pre-season friendly, and it sort of gets talked up a bit of like, you know, we really competed against the Premier League side, and it's just like, come on. But then I've done it as a fan, you sort of kid yourself, don't you?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's a section in my book about pre-season. It's that area where you just pay no attention to it once the season started. But when you have that little bit, you're like, oh, it's big. It's really, people talk it down, but it actually does matter. Like, it really has an impact, and it doesn't.
You just suit whatever your narrative, isn't it? Because I remember Chris Davis's first game in charge. We were 5-0 down to a Paderborn in Austria in the German league in about, I think, 50 minutes. And that was the worst thing since sliced bread. And we just got a world record points total. So, you know, things change. But I will say about the Club World Cup, I mentioned it a few times, that money is going to be the driving force. So don't think anyone's not going to be taking it seriously. You know, if Chelsea miss out on Champions League football this year, they've got a chance to win 100 million. I think you get 40, 50 just for getting a quarter semi-final spot, I think. So I think teams are going to be taking it very seriously.
Harsh on the players, though.
I mean, especially the way I always think of Jude Bellingham just in general, but he's the sort of archetypal player in this system, isn't he? Of like, think how much he gives and how much energy he puts in that midfield role. And he's going to end up playing, what, I think nearly like 80, 90 games this season.
No breaks as well. You know, it's not, the thing about pre-season is you actually get to like take it easy, don't you, a little bit. And they're going to go straight.
It makes
straight
you love
from
the game a bit more. Like, you know, it's absence makes the heart grow fond, doesn't it? Like, when it comes, not having a major tournament this year, international as well, just gives you that little respite from a men's perspective.
Well, the amount of Liverpool fans that are just going, we're really happy we're not in it.
Yeah.
Just shows you everything, doesn't it? It's a money league, isn't it? Well, look at Man United at the end of the season flying out to Asia to play a couple of games for £8 million. It's, at the end of a season, there's no benefit to it other than the money.
Well, it'd be interesting to see what the money brings, doesn't it? So say Man City win it and then they end up signing, I don't know, a player for 150 million out of nowhere. Is that when teams start to churn and be like, oh, hang on a minute, we need to get in? But even, I don't know how you'd get into the next one. Is that in 4 years' time?
I don't know. So if you win the Champions League this year, well, that's Chelsea are in it because they've got to change the way of getting into it. It would work well if it had the best. If it had Barcelona in it, Liverpool in it, Arsenal in it, Sporting in it, it would be a lot better, wouldn't it? But they've dropped the ball on that. But tell you what, just on Man City, though, I would absolutely love it if this is what the Premier League's plan is. We're not going to announce it now like we did with Everton and Forest because your points deduction will be counted in this season where you're not going to win the league anyway. So we're going to wait and give you points deduction at the start of the season, which basically is going to relegate you because then you get like sort of two seasons of damage, don't you?
Yeah, I literally, it's been just dragging on so long, I completely forget about it. But just with that, just makes me think that they're not going to, the punishment will be, and then surely there's appeals as well. And then that just like, just feel like we've
been kicking
it down the road for ages.
In my opinion, they did it. It's just whether they can get off with it. You know, they did inflate. Obviously, they've inflated stuff. I mean, it's so obvious. But the reality is, did the Premier League have the right to have those rules? We'll have to wait and see. But imagine they get a 40-point deduction, but they're top of the league by 15 points. It's going to be just so weird to go, but they are top, but they're actually in the bottom three.
Yeah. It would be more damning if they get a 50-point relegation point total, and then we still get the Championship three sides going down.
How many points do you think you could have a deduction and still stay up? I think Man City could take 60 points and still stay up.
Well, it's 38 is the average, isn't it, to stay up? Well, it's not been recently, to be fair. So,
I think you can stay up with 30 points now.
Bloody hell.
So if you,
who's
took
coming
a,
up? Leeds?
If you took a 50-point deduction, you might still stay up if you're Man City.
Well, actually,
you don't get
safe
until
fan.
Like the end of May, but you're just about. Yeah, they're on target to do this by May the 18th.
It would go the other way. I'd be actually like feeling sorry for them. We'd be like, come on, just get that extra win, City, and you can actually stay up this year. Make the impossible dream.
They've got to give them a big points deduction, though, surely. If they do.
They have, but yeah, it's more he said, isn't it? Or so of them trying to prove it and. Oh, God knows. So many lawyers involved. You always remember that class picture of them lawyers bowling in, like, absolute suited and booted to the high V formation, walking in.
It'd be bad for them, wouldn't it? Because they'd still get to play in the Champions League. But a 50-point deduction would send them, they'd have to play the season next year where they know they're going down, the year after they're in the Championship. So it's basically two seasons, isn't it, before you get back.
I just hope Blues do the double bounce and then don't have to face a Manchester City side in the Championship.
Otherwise, they just won't get found guilty and they'll dominate football for the next 50 years because they're absolutely loaded and they can just...
But who do you think, who's the next incumbent for Pep? Because it's like...
I don't know. I thought he would go in the summer. I really think he should go in the summer.
I mean, 2 years is a long time. Like, I don't, 2 years ago, would we have been saying Javi Alonso would be getting the Real Madrid job? I don't think he'd won the title at Leverkusen then, had he? So there's probably people sniffing around that, you know, we haven't even thought about that could be the next.
I think he should go. I think it's run its course. I think it's time to go. I think it's damaged him. I think the team's ready for a change. But the problem is, I think Man City have looked at it and gone, there is literally nobody. I think it was probably going to be Amorim, actually. I think they were probably looking at
Amorim. Yeah, because of Hugo, Viana and stuff.
But I know that sounds ridiculous now because of what he's done at United, but it would have been a different job at City. But if Pep walked, where would you go? Like, I just don't see anybody out there that you can go and get at the moment. Will Brazier.
What? One word, two syllables, Southgate.
I'd love to see it.
It's just a shame he's... Well, I thought he'd be in club football by now, but...
I've always said to you, where's he going to go? Ashworth was his mate. He wanted him at United. Yeah. Ashworth got the sack because he wanted him at United. That came out the other week that... Ashworth,
is that the reason why?
Yeah, Ashworth wanted Potter or Southgate after Ten Hag, and they went, get out.
Potter's been stinking out the joint, hasn't he?
I think he needs another. I think he's like Amorim, though. He needs a pre-season, doesn't he?
Yeah, he does. No, it'd be interesting. And even that you think of the two-year span of, like, you think of the two-year span of our respective clubs. Mm. 2 years is such a long time in football.
Relegation to promotion. Double dip.
Yeah, hopefully. It just feels dead now that blue season's over. We've got the playoff finals coming up. Sheffield, that should be a good one. Oh, I watched that actually, the Sunderland Coventry game. That was absolutely brilliant.
The trouble with the playoff final now is that's the game where they're definitely getting relegated. Like they're 100% getting relegated. Like there's no chance they're staying up at all.
Yeah.
It's so sad.
Hopefully, because of the way it's worked out, there's obviously the three that get relegated have got parachute payments, but I'll be corrected in the comments by somebody, but next year I don't think there's anybody else with extensive parachute payments. Definitely not first, second year ones, because obviously Luton have gone down as well, but they weren't really going to do much. So we have got a real good chance next season. So just, you know,
I've
when
said
you've forgotten
it all
about
along.
Me, just keep an eye out for those Blues results, all right?
God, I've said it all along.
Double bounce.
Tell you what, in about 18 months' time, Will be massive on YouTube with Birmingham City, the Blues stand.
I'm not doing that. I've spent too much time with you to know how much the ups and downs of that.
It's exciting though for Blues because they could be in that position in 2 or 3 years where they're an established Premier League side. Obviously, Wrexham are pushing for it. I mean, Gary Neville's gone and got another investor and he's got Beckham in. It's funny because we were at that game with Neville and Beckham there and it was almost like they went, oh, I like this, David. Let's have a bit of this. I'll go. Don't worry, I'll do all the work. Just put your name to it. Oh, I'm not really interested, Gary. I already go to bed at 9:30. I'll get up at 3:00. I'll do an extra hour on it. I don't know. I'm enjoying my barbecues and the back of my ass, you know, with Victoria. Come on, let's do it. Let's give it the old band back together. All right, Gary, I'll do it.
That's good, David Beckham. I tell you what. Your impression's absolutely finishing on a high.
Yeah, they'll be the last ones I do. But you've been go on.
I was just going to say, because on Wrexham, I think, you know, people think Wrexham created the perfect storm, not only in terms of how they bought the club and, you know, the low attendance, biggest scope to go forward with the catchment area and bringing fans in. But like in terms of like a streaming platform, you know, we're in a first era of all these streaming platforms and being able to, you know, the size of those people in America is the size of the club in America is absolutely phenomenal, and that's the next market to crash, isn't it? And they've done it from the National League, so I don't see Salford doing that personally. Salford's not his baby, is it? Inter Miami is quite clearly his baby, and I think.
It's Neville. Neville's very clever, though, isn't he? You know, I even watch like Stick to Football and. He ain't the star of that show, but he's the owner of it, isn't he? You know, Carragher's more charismatic than him. Keane's more charismatic than him. Wrighty's more charismatic. I mean, Jill Scott's more charismatic than him. But he positions himself as a businessman incredibly well. And I think he knows that if he can get Beckham even partially invested in the Salford story, you use the Inter Miami connection, you know. I think they'll get to the championship.
I don't.
Don't you?
No, they've got to throw serious money at it again in the next 2 or 3 years. And I think, you probably cast your eye over it a little bit more. But like League One this year, just in terms of like obviously Blues, Wrexham. But then before you got to that, was like, and just the clubs in sort of positions, like I say Stockport, and people might sniff the, pull their nose up to it. But like the way that they've transformed their club, they're just in a much, you have to be on a trajectory, aren't you? Man United at the moment are on a terrible downward trajectory. Blues in the space of a season and because of everything around them are on an upward trajectory. I just feel Salford are very stagnant, and I don't think this will lift them. And we've spent 2 minutes talking about Salford City, which is far too much.
We'll come back in 5 years. Salford have just won the Premier League, Will. You said Wolves were going to get relegated, actually.
I did, yeah. Sorry, that was more out of hope. It'd be Pep Guardiola's Salford City in the Premier League. That'll be his next challenge.
It is a bit sad, though, because it's sort of like we were at the National League playoff final, weren't we, with Seb a year ago, Solihull Moors lost on penalties. They've had a bad season this year, but it feels like those sort of clubs are going to really struggle in the future. You almost need to have, Angry Ginge in charge of you, or Gary Neville, or, Tom Brady. It's
you need something, don't you? Yeah. Like, you need just something to grab onto. And if it's that sort of celebrity owner or that, ex-sportsman that's involved, that's one side of it. But just, even just, obviously Brighton have got their thing with their model and how they work. I just think as a club, you need something to give you that energy and that trajectory. And a lot of people try and just, and a lot of it's copying, isn't it? I mean, we see that so much with the tactics and everything like that and how that's filtered down. But like, if you think you can get a celebrity involved and make a documentary now,
well, the 100% going to do that again, aren't they, at Salford? That's definitely going to happen,
I don't think they'll be. Wrexham have done it well because they've created that documentary for America. Mm. I watch it, but it's done really well over there. There was a gap for it. Ryan Reynolds, blah, blah, blah. Like, no one in England's really going to be bothered about jumping on the Salford bandwagon. And no one in America is really going to be like jumping on that bandwagon either. And that's that.
That is that. Any other Bridgeness?
Do you know what? Really sort of bereft of shows to watch at the moment.
Obviously Mobland.
Finished Yellowstone. Oh, I watched one episode, turned it off.
Why don't you like it?
Thought it was absolutely shite.
Oh.
You know, like the gentleman's like, obviously Guy Ritchie. I bet Niall's absolutely chomping at the bit here to just.
Well, I'm glad we're ending the podcast, because that would have been the end for you, mate. This is the end. I thought you were going to say I watched the episode last week and I couldn't sleep, and I think I know just gruesome but watchable.
Maybe I should. I don't know. I just didn't find it was any good. But I've literally got nothing to watch. And yes, there is 4,000 films with a 10 plus rating on IMDb that I haven't watched as well, so I'm fully aware.
I rewatched a good film at the weekend. I watched Warrior with Tom Hardy, and it was good.
Well, I've never watched that.
That is quite.
Have you watched Tron Legacy yet?
No. I don't think I ever will.
Not Seb would like that, I think. And the new one's out this year, so that'd be a good one to watch.
Yeah, no. Series wise at the moment, there is a lot. I need to watch Andor, actually. I liked that season.
Oh, I've started that. That's my bedtime watch.
Yeah.
I'm just about to finish the first season.
Yeah, I've got a few stacked up that I sort of like, I'll watch them in the summer when there's no football,
Yeah. Even from a sport level, we've got the Lions tour, bit of cricket, but the Ashes, preparing for the Ashes, the Women's World Cup, is it? Women's Euros? Yeah,
shout out for Chelsea for winning the FA Cup. Well done.
Why was that? I thought, because I need to be more into the women's game. But Ella Toon's obviously a big start, but she was, and I know Jim Radcliffe as well, wasn't it? Let's just on football. Jim Radcliffe, nah,
leave it.
The guy stinks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
See. Definitely.
All right then.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for everything.
No, it's been a pleasure. A big shout out to Will and Niall, and also everybody who's been listening over the last couple of years. Really appreciate it. Obviously, we'll all be doing our own thing still, and hopefully together in the future. But yeah, it's been a good journey. And ending it on a positive is always the way to go, I think.
Yeah. No, it's been a dream of mine to sort of do, especially to have the. I think the word community, and I think you all agree with me, gets very banded around, especially by suits and ties quite a lot, but I think we have made a real community. So that was sort of a real bucket list for me to tick off. And you know, even going on the old analytics, and you go on the audience, which I'm doing now, and you know, last week's episode there was someone in Mozambique listening, Barbados, Morocco, Chile, Tanzania, Cameroon. So we are, like Pitbull said, Mr. International Worldwide. And it's been a pleasure. There's no videos coming out of, I think every time something ends, I think people think it's a bad
no
thing,
it's like, but you said, I mean, to be fair, you said at Christmas when we came back after, you know, having to move out of the studio, you were like, you know, I'm not going to hang around if it's, you know, not going to work and stuff like that. And it sort of surprised me at the time. You probably saw the writing on the wall, really, of losing the studio was going to be quite demoralizing for us all. And I think over the last few months you were ahead of the game on that, and it has been that. And it wasn't like we didn't try to find places, but I think where we are and finding somewhere again, it just, yeah, the writing was sort of on the wall a little bit. And sometimes I think it's better to get out at the right point, which is the end of the season, and look at new things. So yeah, all positive from my side, unlike others.
And I think for the beauty of what you do as well, isn't it? Like we've said before, it's like you've built what you have basically from that room, and you can be reliant on yourself. And I think that's a really good thing, especially in this day and age where, you know, ex-players are coming back to sort of dominate the market. And you know, there is a place for that, but there definitely needs to be a place for sort of independent voices going forward as well.
100%, especially when you've got like people who are sat there, ex-players going 3-4-3 with Amrim's never going to work in the Premier League, and there are producers listening to that, and there are presenters going yeah, and it's like not one of them gets the light bulb moment to go, you know, the game we're doing it for, Newcastle are playing a 3-4-3. You know, Conte won a title with 3-4-3. And it's just like, there definitely needs to be independent voices, because otherwise you just end up being spoken. And some of them come out with good stuff, but you do get a lot of crap out there. So, big up the community. There's plenty of places to still find us. Still going to be on That's Football YouTube. So, yeah, thank you, everybody, as usual, from my side.
Thank you, Mark. It's been a great journey. Great that I got to take you to St Andrews. We've been to Wembley, been on some live shows, and we've had a few pints together as well along the way.
Thanks, everyone. Good night.
Good night.